Hello, everybody. This is English for You, the program that helps you improve your English. I can see some students in the studio, and I believe they are my students from Fazekas. Kata, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Great. Szabolcs, how's it hanging?
Everything's great.
Victor, what's up?
I'm fine, thanks.
Victoria, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Good, so everybody's okay. Today's special guest is Mr. Robin Kirby from the United States. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, you're welcome.
And Robin was born in North Carolina. And I would like to introduce him with the help of a beautiful family photograph. So this gentleman was born in North Carolina. What about the kids?
They were all born in different places, I think. My oldest daughter was born in Muncie, Indiana. The next daughter was born in Kissimmee, Florida. And the two boys were born here in Budapest.
Are they Hungarians?
No, they're not.
They're not?
No.
Can they speak Hungarian?
One of them speaks Hungarian and English. The other one doesn't speak much of anything yet.
How old is he?
He is about 20 months.
20 months old. Fine. So he's going to talk enough.
Right.
Right. I'm absolutely sure about that. Good. Now, what have you been doing in Hungary? I mean, I've learned somewhere that you work for, you're a member of Campus Crusade for Christ.
Correct.
Yes, Campus Crusade for Christ. So what is this?
Campus Crusade is an organization that is a Christian organization, and we work with students, we work with adults, we work with churches, and we do many different things.
You go into the classroom?
Well, the part of Campus Crusade that I work with does work in the high schools here in Budapest, and we actually go into classrooms.
Yeah, you walk into the classroom and you start talking about Jesus Christ?
No, no.
So, we are there. So what are the issues you raise? What are
the issues we raise, we hope, are relevant. Dealing with friendship, any kind of relationships, family, self-image, sex, drugs, any kind of problems. Anything that you want to talk about, we're interested in talking about and making it relevant, or making the Bible and the message of Christianity relevant in those areas, just to show how there's a connection between God and those
right.
issues.
So, in short, you want to help them. You want to help
Correct.
People. Right. Now, we're going to have another picture, which is very different from what we've been talking about. And I want Kata to describe this picture. First of all, who do you think is in the picture and what's happening?
I guess it's our very kind guest there. And he's taking part in a, what's that, a sports event? Is that a I don't know what, something with running. I don't know the name. And he's just crossing the line.
Yes. The finish line. And what's he doing?
He's watching his watch.
He's glancing at, he's looking at his watch. What kind of a sport event do you think this might be?
Marathon.
Look at the guy. I mean, he's at death's door.
Exhausted.
Marathon running.
Say it again.
Marathon running.
Marathon. Right. So Robin takes part in marathons. And I've got a fantastic picture here. And this is the Budapest Marathon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see the time. Who can make out his time? It's difficult, but I can help you. The time is 3 hours 19:19. So it's over 3 hours, right? That's fantastic. Now, can you think when you run?
Oh yeah, that's why
just,
I like
you
wanna, to run.
You want to stay alive, or you can actually think?
I can actually think.
Right, and how can you prepare for a marathon? First of all, what's the distance?
The distance of the marathon is 42 kilometers, 42.195 kilometers.
And you run this every day?
No, not every day. I run it only during the race.
During the race, and we're going to have a picture here, so would you just come here? And this is going to be Robin's Saturday route. Over to you.
Okay. I start in Németvölgy, which is near the Novotel, the Balcsomó Pont, and I run down all the way to the Kelenföld Városközpont, to the center of the Kelenföld city, and beyond. I run all the way down almost to Budafok, and then I turn back around, and I run all the way up along the river road to Margit Island. And when I reach Margit Island, I go onto the island and I run around one or two times and then I return home.
So, thank you very much. We are speechless. And the problem is that you usually run on concrete. Aren't you afraid that this concrete will destroy your spine and all your bones?
So far, no. I have good shoes. The only real equipment you need when you run is a good pair of shoes. And so that helps to absorb the shock that's that happens continually.
And what about air pollution?
I don't think about it.
Yeah,
it doesn't smell good, but...
But it's Saturday morning, so it's not that bad.
Right. On Saturday mornings, I start out about 5:30. There's not much traffic.
Yeah. Are you satisfied with the result you had in the Budapest Marathon?
Yes, that was my best so far.
You came in 110th, or what
place?
Well,
I was 241, the 241st person to cross.
Great. Congratulations.
So, thank you.
Now, we are traveling to London, to the London Marathon, Group 1. Why do people take part in the London Marathon? Group 2, what staggering figure is mentioned? Would you roll the tape, please?
Every year, the London Marathon attracts thousands of athletes from around the globe. Some are serious entrants, others run to raise cash for charities. Since the marathon's conception 22 years ago, £156 million has been raised. The marathon is now recognised as the world's largest single-day fundraising event and is important to both British and international charities.
Right, Soboj.
They want to raise cash for charity.
Yet one part.
And want to compete. So
just to compete. Yes. So wanted to raise money. And Victor, could you catch the staggering figure?
£156 million
has been raised.
Raised, yes.
Right. So this is a fundraising event. Collect money for charity. I just don't understand how can you collect money when you run. So can you help me with the mechanism? What's going on?
I've never done that. I did take part in a walkathon, which probably is based on the same principle, where I would go to my friends and even my neighbors who I don't know and ask them to give money to me for each kilometer or each mile that I would run. And then when I finish that distance, then I go back to them and collect that money, and then I give it to the charity that I am representing.
And do you think people are willing to give money?
I think so, with 156 million
it's pretty convincing,
pounds.
Yes.
I wonder how many pounds have been lost, mm-hmm. though, in running all these marathons.
Okay, fine. Now we are going to have a huge leap to history with a picture. And I would like Victoria to talk about the picture, looking at the faces, and it's going to be a couple of centuries back.
Yes, I think so. To me, this seems like reformation, isn't it?
I'm not saying a word.
So, if supposing this is a church or a temple, because it has no cross on the top of it, so it can't be Christian, but it doesn't have any other signs either.
Can't be Catholic.
Yes.
Okay.
And yes, you're right, but it's very Puritan, so it could be, couldn't it? It could be the Mayflower people. I don't know. Really, I just got the idea because.
Yeah, and you look at the faces. What kind of facial expressions can you read?
They are resolved and very serious.
And determined, single-minded, but not too happy.
Yeah.
Right, but very determined. Right, thank you very much. An excellent description. Now we're going to have another picture, and I would like another student to say a couple of sentences about it. Over to you, Victor.
Okay, so we can see a shoreline, and a big sailing ship is in the distance, and there are people coming into the island, maybe, and it's about the big discoveries. So
I think Victoria was right Victoria was right when she mentioned the ship. Would you say the name of the ship again?
The Mayflower.
The Mayflower, yes. And the Pilgrim Fathers arrived on board the Mayflower, right? Robin, could you help me? Who were they? Who were the Pilgrim Fathers? Why did they leave England?
As I understand it, the Pilgrim Fathers were a group of people, and they refer to the men because of the word fathers, but it was there were about 100 people altogether on the Mayflower who left the continent of Europe. They left England and the Netherlands to go to the New World to be able to worship God in the way that they wanted to, because at the time there was not freedom to worship in the way that they desired.
Right. Now we're going to have the story in short, and I would like you to use your brilliant, superior, sharp intellect to come up with the word which is missing. So if you know the word, if you think you know the word, would you put up your hand, and I would like you to read out kata.
Isn't it wind?
Yeah, would you read out the whole sentence, or maybe two sentences?
On the morning of September the 6th in 1620, a fine wind was blowing. There were 102 passengers on board of board the Mayflower.
Yes, Robin, you're absolutely right. 102 passengers, the Pilgrim Fathers, only 102, and we are in September 1620. Could I have the next one, please? And if you know the missing word, I would like you to put up your hand and read out the sentence. Saboj, I'm going to help you,
okay,
if you're stuck.
So on December 16 of 1620, the Mayflower arrived in Plymouth. Many of the pilgrims lay sick in bed, maybe.
Excellent.
So in bed with high fevers.
Right. So they arrived in Plymouth in December. Okay? 3 months later, in December, which is not a very favorable period to arrive at a place. And now we have the last bit of the story.
Right.
Victor, please.
By the 1st of April 1621, only 55 pilgrims were left, and almost half of them were children. Only 20 men and 8 women survived the winter.
I told you, excellent intellect. So, if you think about that, that 102 Pilgrim Fathers arrived, and only half of them survived the first winter, you can say that it must have been really hard and terrible. Now I'm going to read out a very short passage from this book, which is surprisingly the Pilgrim Fathers, and the Pilgrim Fathers and the Indians. On the morning of March the 16th, the village was terrified. Out of the woods stepped a tall, straight-backed Indian. The man ran towards him. He marched right up to them. "Welcome," the Indian said. Then he smiled a great big smile. The pilgrims couldn't believe their ears. A friendly Indian who spoke English was the last thing they had expected. Right, and you can see this wonderful illustration here. Now we're going to have 3 very interesting names on the projector, and I'm turning to you, Robin, for help. So what can you tell us about these 3 names?
These are the names of 3 Indians, and I'm not sure, but I think the one in the middle, Squanto, was the man who walked into the village where the pilgrims lived.
Right.
Samoset was his friend, who I think found the pilgrims and went back and got his friend, because he knew that Squanto had been taken to England 1 or 2 times and had learned English and had been returned to the continent of North America, where he found that everybody in his tribe had died or they had moved. And this is where the pilgrims were. And so Samoset went to get Squanto and introduced him to the pilgrims. And then Massasoit was the chief of the Indian tribe in that area.
Sorry to interrupt you. What's the name of the state in Plymouth, where Plymouth is?
Do you guys know?
Think of the name Massasoit.
Massachusetts.
Say it again.
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. So I don't think it's just coincidence.
No, probably not.
So the chief of the Iroquois Indians was Massasoit, and the name of the state is now Massachusetts. So there must be some kind of coincidence between these two things. Now, we are in 1621, and now they had a nice harvest. How did the Indians help the Pilgrim Fathers?
Well, one of the things that Squanto did was he taught them how to hunt, fish, and plant crops.
And then they had the first feast, a huge meal when you invite people and celebrate an occasion. And they had the first feast in 1621.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What do you think they ate then?
Well, they probably ate a lot of game, wild game. Now, it actually wasn't a great harvest that they had, but it was enough for them to eat. And the Indians actually came, and they brought food as well. There were maybe 70 Indians, and they ate most of the food that the pilgrims had set aside for the winter. And when they realized that, Massasoit sent his Indian braves out to get more food for them.
Right, so this was the first feast, and we could call this first feast the first Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving.
When is Thanksgiving in the United States? And I would say that Thanksgiving is the most American, or one of the most typical American holiday, right?
One right.
Holidays. So when is Thanksgiving?
It falls on the fourth Thursday of every November.
Right, so it's pretty soon. It's pretty soon, and we're going to have a picture here. Is it a typical picture?
I think so.
Yes, so
because you have many different generations of people, probably both sides of the family are together.
Would you like to talk about your Thanksgiving back in the States? How many people were around the table?
I think by the time the meal started on Thursday afternoon, there could have been 25 to 30 people together in one place, mm-hmm. and we would eat. Maybe not around one table, but we had all the food in one room, and we all sat at different smaller tables in another room.
Right. Thank you very much. And I'm going to have a couple of pieces of paper here, and I would like you to look at this sentence. And we're going to have the first picture, and if you can match your card with the picture, then would you please put up your hand? Is it yours, Victor? Would you try that?
Yes, maybe. I don't know. Thanksgiving is a meal made up of traditional must-have foods, and no menu items are more crucial than the potato side dishes.
I don't really think it's a potato side dish. What is this?
Turkey.
Who's got the turkey? Yeah.
Okay.
So would you read out yours, please?
So when cooking turkey, achieving golden skin and juicy white meat qualifies as an art.
So turkey is a must-have, right, if it's Thanksgiving. Could we have the second picture? And it's going to be... Oh, yes.
This is mine.
Victor, yes. Have another go. Okay. Could you read it out,
Thanksgiving please? Is a meal made up of traditional must-have foods, and no menu items are more crucial than the potato side dishes.
Yes. Thank you very much. Do you have a favorite potato side dish?
I like mashed potatoes with
right.
butter and gravy.
Yeah, and is it possible to mess up the turkey, to overcook the turkey?
Yes.
Have you ever had a Thanksgiving which was ruined because the turkey was not perfect?
The Thanksgiving wasn't ruined, but the turkey wasn't prepared correctly. So it was kind of weird.
Right. Okay. The next picture is, who do you think it is?
It could be mine.
Yeah.
Moist and savory bread-based stuffings are many people's favorite element of Thanksgiving dinner.
Right, so moist and moist. Could you help with this word, Robin? Moist, if it's has anything to do with food. So what does that mean, moist?
It has something to do with the content of water. It's not wet, but it's not dry. And so it's soft when you bite into it. And so it feels like it's soft.
And pleasant.
Right.
And pleasant. And we have this word, stuffing. What is the stuffing?
Stuffing could be a lot of different things. It could could be bread, it could be meat, it could be both, it could be...
What's your favorite stuffing?
My mother used to make one with sausage and bread, and it's cooked
inside
in the turkey.
Inside the turkey,
while the
sausage
cookie, and... While the cookie the turkey cooks, it is also cooking.
Right. Okay, so we have the last picture now, which is... I suppose it must be yours.
So, sauces play an important role in the Thanksgiving menu.
Right, sauces. And do you have a favorite sauce? Robin? You are not for
more
sauces?
Gravy. More gravy would go better with me.
What's gravy?
Gravy is a mixture of the juices from the turkey and starch, cornstarch, mixed together, maybe with a little flour. And you put that over the turkey and your mashed potatoes or anything you want.
Right. Thank you very much. It's food time, folks. So we're going to taste one or two of the things we have just mentioned. And this is the first. And I would like you to guess what you think you are eating. And you're going to find a couple of napkins in your desk. And just taste it. Right, it looks wonderful.
Thanks.
Okay, just taste it very quickly and say what you think you are eating. Sorry to bother you, Kata, but what do you think you are eating?
I don't have the faintest idea. It could be pumpkin.
Yes, pumpkin.
You think it's pumpkin? No, it is actually sweet potato, or sometimes called yam. And it was made by Robin's wife, Carolyn. So say thank you to
okay,
Carolyn.
I will.
And the top is marshmallow, okay? You like it or not?
It's
very strange,
good.
Victor?
It's good, I think it's good.
It's sweet potato. And
it tastes better warm. And so it's sweet, and it does taste good.
Right, now we're going to have, and you can just mix the tastes. This is the second thing we have, and again, I'm going to start with Victoria, so
thank
I think
you.
It's going to be your turn to taste it and say what you think
thank
it
you.
Might be.
Thanks.
It's like strawberry jam.
You are very close, but it is not strawberry. This is cranberry, and it's a kind of berry. And the taste is, what does it taste like? You like the taste?
Sure, I do.
And the taste is, and it's a very important word, is, say it, Robin, will you?
Tangy.
Tangy, sharp, like that of the lemon juice. Really sharp. You taste it, Kata? Would
yes.
you taste it? You liked it?
It was great.
It was great. Okay. You can just go on eating, but I'm going to ask Christina, our second special guest, to come in, right? Great. Christina, you look wonderful. I've learned that you spent a couple of months in the United States. Is that true?
Yeah.
Where exactly?
Where? In Hollywood.
In Hollywood. And was it a... Were you wearing the same beautiful costume there?
Yeah, almost.
So you work for...
For Café Mozart.
Café Mozart, and there's a Café Mozart in Hollywood
yeah.
and in Budapest too. Wonderful costume you have, congratulations.
Thank you.
And what was the thing you liked best in Hollywood?
The celebrities.
Celebrities?
Yeah.
Famous people?
Yeah.
Right. And this is the last thing we're going to taste, and this is the dessert. So would you please help me serve this? Robin, and again...
Thank
what
you.
Do you think oh. you are eating?
Just look at
it.
Right? Mm. I think I'm going to taste this.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Christina. Thanks a lot. Mmm. Szabolcs, what is this?
Mmm. Something very good, but I have no idea.
No idea.
Isn't it the pumpkin? Pumpkin pie.
Obviously, the top is pretty easy. So what's the top?
Whipped cream.
Whipped cream. And inside, you are absolutely right. This is pumpkin pie, which is in Hungarian.
Tök pite.
So we are eating pumpkin pie. And you can see the pumpkin on the projector, right? So is pumpkin pie... the thing that people at Thanksgiving eat in the United States?
It's essential. Now, as a kid, I never ate it.
But now you like it?
Oh, I love it.
All right. You just guys go on eating, and we're going to say goodbye. Robin, thank you very much for coming.
You're
and I
welcome.
Think we've learned a lot about Thanksgiving. See you guys next week. Bye-bye.
A JML Fast Fit vasalódeszka borító megkönnyíti a vasalást. Erős, rugalmas széle van, így minden deszkára illeszkedik. Mivel vastag az alátét, a gombok fölött is vasalhat. A speciális hővisszaverő rétege miatt elég egy oldalról vasalni. Csúszásgátló felülete megtartja a ruhákat. Páratlanul elegáns választékban kínáljuk, és mosógépben is mosható. Ideje az öreg vasalódeszka borítót kicserélni. Keresse a Fast Fitet a Tesco áruházakban.